6 hours after claiming victory in California, Lake awoke to a frenzied morning of live interviews. He suffered through 18 in 2 hours, then flew to Washington. He went straight to his campaign headquarters and thanked his workers, almost none of whom were volunteers. He worked his crowd, shook their hands, all the while asking himself, "Where did these people come from?" "We're gonna win," he said over and over, and everybody believed it. Why not? He met for an hour with his top people. He had $65 million, no debt. Terry had less than $1 million on hand, and he was still trying to count the money he owed. In fact, the Terry campaign had missed a federal filing deadline because its books were in such a mess. All cash had vanished. Contributions had stopped. Lake was getting all the money. The names of three potential vice presidents were debated with great enthusiasm. It was an exhilarating exercise because it meant the nomination was in the bag. A committee was appointed to explore the issue further. And a committee was appointed to begin planning Lake's presence at the convention in Denver. Lake wanted a new speechwriter now, and he wanted him working on the acceptance speech. Negatives were pushed to the end of the meeting and given short shrift. A reporter for the Post had been digging into Lake's early business career. Without too much effort, he had stumbled upon the Greentree mess, a failed land development 22 years in the past. Lake and a partner had bankrupted Greentree, legally shafting creditors out of $800,000. "I'll answer any question about Greentree," Lake said. "It was just a bad business deal."
"The press is about to shift gears," said the chairman of media relations. "You're new, and you haven't been subjected to enough scrutiny. It's time for them to get nasty."
"It's already started," Lake said. "I have no skeletons." He was whisked away for an early dinner with Elaine Tyner, the lawyer running DPAC. She laid out the current financials of the newest PAC on the block. Cash in hand of $29 million. Money being churned around the clock, coming in from everywhere in the world. Spending it was the challenge, since it was considered soft money, or money that couldn't go directly to the Lake campaign, it had to be used elsewhere. Tyner had several targets. The first was a series of generic ads similar to the doomsday ads Teddy had put together. The second, and by far the most enjoyable, were the Senate and congressional races. "They're lining up like ants," she said with great amusement. "It's amazing what a few million bucks can do." In all, Tyner and DPAC were meddling in 30 House races and 10 in the Senate. She expected to raise a total of $60 million and spend every dime of it by November. Her third area of focus was taking the pulse of the country. DPAC was polling nonstop every day, 15 hours a day. If labor in western Pennsylvania was bothered by an issue, DPAC would know it. If the women in Greater Chicago liked or disliked a Lake ad, DPAC knew yes or no, and by what percentage. "We know everything," she boasted. "We're like Big Brother, always watching." The polling cost $60,000 a day, a bargain. No one could touch it. For the important matters, Lake was 9 points ahead of Terry in Texas, even in Florida, a state Lake had yet to visit, and very close in Indiana, Terry's home state. "What are the vice president's numbers?" Lake asked. "He'll squeak out the nomination," she said, offering nothing new. "But the convention will be bloody. Right now, you're only a few points behind him on the big question, who will you vote for in November?" November is far away.
"It is, and it isn't."
"A lot can change," Lake said, thinking of Teddy and wondering what sort of crisis he'd create to terrify the American people.